Oh, the nerves I get every time that intro kicks in and the show is getting ready to begin. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to The Perspective. My name's Ethan, and your hosts for the evening are Martin and Kenneth. How are you guys doing?
I'm good. I just got my little ding up on the screen as a subscriber telling me, hey, The Perspective's on. Close that real quick.
You sure? Oh, do you have call-in studio open?
I do.
Oh, sweet. Martin, you do too, right?
Yes, sir.
Awesome. Welcome to The Perspective, a show where we tackle paranormal and supernatural claims, belief in aliens, conspiracy theories, and any political claims, pretty much anything under the sun, and apply a skeptic's lens to it. So, Kenneth.
Yep.
I wanted to say I hope you had a good time at your bachelor party.
Yeah.
But before we jump into calls, it sounds like you didn't.
No. It was a disaster. Like,
I'm sorry, man.
But you know, like I was telling you this story before we got on about going to a strip club and just getting completely ripped off. Before we even had a chance to order a drink, they were trying to rip us off so bad that we ended up just leaving. And I don't know. Should I just tell the story?
Go ahead.
Do okay, it. So we go to this place in Las Vegas. They call it a gentleman's club. So I don't know why they were going to let me in the first place, but the game plan basically was this group of six guys. We're going to go and, stare at some boobs.
I don't understand the appeal, but enjoy them for me.
Right. So the, long story short is, I'd been to this club years ago. It was fairly reasonable, to go in there. Drinks were a little bit expensive. There was like a $20 cover to get in. No big deal. We get down there, at the door, they tell us the cover is $50. We're like, okay, well, whatever. We'll go in, we'll sit down. So we sit down and, there's the six of us at a table, and the cocktail waitress comes over and says, hey, so we have a new policy here where you have to order a new round of drinks every half an hour or we'll kick you the fuck out. That's not how she said it. She said you'll be asked to leave. So, but I knew what she was saying. So we're going, all right. And she goes, or you can get a bottle, and for the whole night, you're good if you just do the bottle service thing. So we say, okay, let's see the menu. So we look at it. The cheapest thing on the bottle service menu.
Wait. Let me say my guesses.
Was
I guessed like 50. What was the type of liquor again?
It was flavored Sky Vodka, which you can get at your local grocery store for like $18.99.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not like it makes a huge difference, 50. But was it a handle or a fifth?
And Martin.
I'm not sure.
And Martin guessed it was.
I guess 200.
Yeah. And I'm thinking Martin is just off the rails. There's no way.
That's and high then. Volume.
Yeah.
Kenneth spits out the number.
It was $550.
We're like, what?
For like the shittiest vodka you could possibly buy. And that was like where negotiations began. So we're like, holy shit. So I go, listen, we're not fancy people. We're just humble gentlemen here, you know, on our little trip. What if we just got like a bucket of beers or whatever? She goes, yeah, you can get a bucket. There's 12 beers in a bucket, but you'd have to order one every half an hour. So we're doing the math in our head. And we're like, hey, that's a beer every 15 minutes per guy. That's kind of excessive. And we ask her, how much is a bottle of 12 Bud Lights? Was $196. So
it's just astronomical.
So you know how I'm always talking about fallacies? This is great. This is a learning experience. So I leaned into the table. And I tell the guys, I'm leaving. I don't want to do this. This is ridiculous. They're trying to rip us off. And a couple of the guys are like, well, we already paid $50 to get in. So those of you who are familiar with fallacies are already going, okay, well, this is like a sunk cost fallacy.
Yes, it is.
And it's how they get you. So it's they're counting on that. That you're going to be like, oh, well, I already traveled all this way and I already paid my thing. So I'll just sit here while they fuck me. So that's a mistake. It's a mistake to go, I've already paid X, so I'm obligated to stay. Or that if I stay, things are going to get better. So this was a great example of how studying fallacies and learning about critical thinking and logic helped me and my group out, because the rest of the night guys were saying, oh, I lost $50. And I'm like, no, you didn't. You saved like 300,
right,
by walking away. So, you know, anyway.
Well, I feel like that's the perfect time to jump into calls.
Yeah.
All right. I am going to, your first caller, we're going to bring on in just a moment, thinks vaccines were handled poorly. I don't know how much you guys are going to disagree with him or not, but anyways, David, welcome to the show. You're on with Martin and Kenneth.
Hi, David. Hey, David.
Hello.
How's it going?
Hey, how are you doing?
Yeah, what can we do for you?
Oh, well, I guess I'm supposed to make some sort of point.
That's preferable.
Talk about it.
Yeah.
A friend of mine recommended that I speak to you about the vaccine situation.
Okay. What about it? What's your take?
And basically, I'll just say a little bit about my background. I'm a scientist. I went to school at Cornell University, an engineering school for applied physics, and worked as a chemist after that for a while. And then recently, I've been very much into this concept of metabolic medicine. Actually, I've been working on a book on that subject, which is basically all about how what you eat and all the things we put in our bodies, how that affects our metabolism and the pathways in our bodies. So
okay,
that's my background a little bit.
Cool.
And I've been on a group on Facebook called CVQs, and we started it way back in March 2020. And it was all about just exploring the narrative behind the pandemic and, looking at alternative narratives and see what makes sense and what doesn't make sense, and spending a lot of time looking at the actual science.
Okay.
So that's where I'm at. And over that year, it became very apparent to me that the pandemic should not be taken at face value. And there's a lot of ulterior motives that are unfolding right now. And that's what's driving the pandemic. And it has relatively little to do with saving people.
Could you say a lot of ulterior motives? Right. Yeah, David, you said a lot of ulterior motives. Could you name one for us that you suspect is true?
Well, the most obvious one is the most obvious ulterior motive is the somewhere between $100 billion and $300 billion in revenue, or probably close to $1 trillion in revenue that the vaccine makers are going to make over the next 4 or 5 years. So that's the most obvious ulterior motive that has a separate motive from saving people's lives.
Well, so the motivation is to do what exactly?
I mean, nobody would argue with that, right?
Well, but the motivation here would be to do what? To get people vaccinated?
Well, no. The motivation of the companies is to earn fantastic profits.
Agreed. So, healthcare companies.
Nobody would argue with that, right?
That's healthcare companies are
up for debate.
Healthcare. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
So that's not,
company.
It's an ulterior motive in the sense it's not like, oh, our motive is to save the world. Our motive is to make a whole lot of money and in the process save the world, which is not exactly the same thing, right?
That's a kind
of ulterior motive.
I don't think anybody thinks that pharmaceutical companies' goals are to save the world. I haven't heard anybody.
Well, we're 100% in agreement about that.
Sure.
David, when you say that healthcare companies making money is an ulterior motive, I mean, it's an ulterior motive to the purpose of providing healthcare, but that's the way the companies are structured in America, is to create revenue for their shareholders. Well, so I don't think it's ulterior. I think it's a direct motive. However, David. Let me finish a thought, please. Sorry, because there's a really bad delay and we keep hitting up against each other and I don't want to cut you off, but I've been trying to say something for a few minutes now. So
go for it.
What I'd like for you to do is explain to me what actions the healthcare companies took that convinces you that they're in it for the profit and they're not in it. Like, so I guess maybe we should start here. Do you think the vaccine prevents COVID?
I do think that it has some efficacy against COVID, yes.
Okay. So in addition to that, you're saying that the profit motive is encouraging these healthcare companies to do what?
Well, I would say it's totally corrupted the response for several reasons. One of those reasons is that all treatments of COVID are being effectively suppressed in the United States. So, for example, if someone is sick and they go to the doctor and the doctor gives them a test and they diagnose them with COVID, the doctor will say, you have COVID, go home, get a lot of rest, drink tea, take an aspirin, and if you stop being able to breathe, go to the hospital. So the standard of care in the United States for COVID is no treatment whatsoever. And that there's never been
any
disease in history where doctors refuse to treat the illness.
Well, yeah, what you said just now, it just flat out isn't true, because it depends on the severity of the COVID. I mean, it depends on the diagnosis. If somebody is exhibiting some symptoms, but it appears that they're manageable, you know, that they may be able to just go home, they're sending them home. But there's a reason for that. The reason is that the beds in the hospitals are needed for those people who are going through like the most severe symptoms. I mean, all over the country,
I agree with you.
The ICUs are full of COVID patients. So,
okay.
So I just don't understand what the point is that you're trying to make. I mean, like at the outset.
Let me make my point then.
Go ahead.
Basically, it turns out that COVID is highly treatable, especially in the first week, because the virus is actually only active for the first week. By the time someone gets to the hospital, the virus is already dead in their body, and they're dealing with fragments and all these autoimmune issues. But there's a critical period when the patient is home in the first couple of weeks. Yes.
I actually do need to cut in on that. I don't think that's accurate 100% of the time. Do you have data to back that up, that in all patients, COVID dies within the first week? Because I know of people who have had active... David, I know of people who have had active COVID infections for over 6 months.
Yes, that's long COVID. That's a little bit of a different thing.
It's not actually. It's still COVID. David, what you're doing is you're cutting out the parts that don't line up with your narrative, such as long COVID, and you're just saying that all COVID dies within a week, and that's simply not true because of long COVID.
No, I'm just saying that ICU doctors have stated that in most cases, by the time the patient gets to the hospital, it's in the pulmonary phase, which is an acute inflammatory phase, and it's already out of the viral phase. If you want to disbelieve it, it's fine.
We're not talking about this is we've gotten off on the wrong foot here. This call is very disorganized. So here's what I need you to do. I need you to present your thesis here. What is the finish line? And then we can work our way back to it. So what is the big point here?
That there are very strong ulterior motives that have nothing to do with health that are running the pandemic. In fact, it's being deliberately prolonged and with the hope of fully vaccinating the entire planet. Not only that, but continuing to vaccinate with many, many boosters. And on top of that, to add a vaccine passport so that you literally have to show a QR code proving that you've had all your vaccines just to go to a grocery store or a restaurant. And that's already coming in LA.
David.
So that's my thesis.
I don't understand the gap between you agreeing that vaccinations prevent COVID and you claiming that that hospitals or the medical industry somehow is prolonging COVID. What my understanding of what prolonging COVID is, people, one, not masking. Two, not quarantining in the first place, back in March 2020, all those centuries ago. And three, not getting vaccinated, because vaccines prevent COVID transmission. They just do. Yes, it is true. If you look at COVID cases right now, I believe it's like 95% of COVID cases are unvaccinated folks right now. And the 5% or less, I mean, it varies by state, because that's the most recent data that I've seen is the state by state breakdown. But I'd say 5% or less across all states are vaccinated folks and the other 95% are unvaccinated folks of active COVID cases now.
That's a different issue. You were talking about the spreading COVID. And CDC just announced about a week or two ago that vaccinated people spread, they achieve the same viral loads as unvaccinated people, and they spread the Delta variant just as easily as vaccinated as unvaccinated people. So there's no difference in spread. So there's actually no reason.
There is a difference in how it affects people, COVID, they're vaccinated.
He's wrong at a more foundational level.
Yeah, Kenneth, go ahead.
So, you're talking specifically about the spread of one variant.
Well, that's 93% of all cases now are the Delta variant. So it's basically all of them.
93% of cases that end up in ICUs or 93% of cases are total? It's the ICU one, right? So this is the thing. How do these variants happen?
The variants happen because of vaccination.
See, because
that's what people don't realize. Because of non-sterilizing immunity. Do you know what that is? That's basically when, if you get that, like, especially in the two booster situation, when you get your first shot, you only have this partial immunity, and you can have a full-on COVID case while you're vaccinated. But the problem with that is now you have these living viruses in your body, and your body's a little mutation factory, and body's 2020 protein. It drives the virus to be able to basically become resistant to the vaccination. It's very similar to antibiotic resistance.
Don't believe that viral resistance functions the same way as antibiotic resistance. I think you're conflating viruses and bacteria. David, if you think about it, they're actually not the same.
But this is the thing. I don't want to hear a layperson explain this stuff to me. So the bottom line is your thesis has nothing to do with the science and everything to do with what you think these ulterior motives are that people have, that pharmaceutical companies are, you know, out to make a profit. I mean, why do you think it is that...
You haven't really let me finish my point.
There's been a lot of that in all directions, sir. So let's all do a better job of taking turns.
Your whole thing, though, isn't about really the science of the virus. And I mean, none of us here are qualified, including you, to really speak on that science. So
I'm very focused on the science.
I don't give a fuck how focused you are on it. You're an engineer. You're not an epidemiologist. OK, so.
OK, well, that's just. OK.
It's
not really an argument. That's just.
No, it's not. It's a fact, is what it is. It's not an argument. It's a fact.
I was making a point about treatment.
Listen, I'm an educated person too, but that doesn't mean that speaking outside of the narrow area of which I'm actually educated, if I start speaking on other things, like I'm some kind of authority, I'm bullshitting people. Okay. I defer to experts because I know enough about the world I'm not an
expert in this situation. That's all.
You are not an expert.
Okay. Let's not argue about that. Let me at least describe what I was saying about treatment, because I don't think you understood that point.
You're not going to talk about treatment. So I've muted you because what you're going to talk about is what you said your point is about these ulterior motives. You think that there's some nefarious cabal of people out there who are fucking up the handling of this virus and prolonging it for personal gain. So that's what you can talk about.
That's the treatment is one aspect of that. And the fact that they're trying to vaccinate people that's the first aspect. The second aspect that shows that it's an ulterior motive is they're pushing vaccinations on children who absolutely don't need it, and it's very dangerous for children.
How do you know who does and doesn't need the virus?
We're done with this. We're not going to be broadcasting pseudoscience like this. I'm sorry. I'm dropping him. No, we're not going to have some engineer come on and tell us which children should and should not be qualified to get the vaccine. We vaccinate babies for measles. We vaccinate babies for polio. We give babies vaccines all the time. The COVID vaccine is new, and that's why they said, hey, maybe we shouldn't give this to five-year-olds yet. Let's run a bunch of clinical trials first. And they're in the process of doing all of that right now. Again, I dropped him, Kenneth, because I know you did. I cannot deal with that.
It's a real problem. There's people think that ignorance is the biggest barrier to knowledge, but it's not. The biggest barrier to knowledge is the illusion of knowledge, is thinking you already know stuff. And right now, there's the pandemic of COVID, but there is a much more dangerous phenomena that's happening, that has been happening for years, of people pretending to know things that they don't know. It gets us in all kinds of trouble as a species. Okay. I was talking recently to a close family member of mine who I found out, she says to me, I'm not vaccinated. I have no intention of getting vaccinated, and starts talking to me about how, basically just regurgitating anti-vax talking points. And in my conversation with this person, I'm going, listen, you have not done the research. I have not done the research, because the conversation ended with her saying, well, I'll do more research. And I'm going on Google, on Facebook. Like, what are you going to do? The CDC has 2,000 qualified scientists working on this, actually doing the research. So any of us out here who are like, oh, well, I'll spend a couple of hours on Google and really figure it out, you are delusional if you think that you are going to have some level of expertise at that point.
The question I'd put to David is, did you get your engineering degree on Google, or did you go to a university and learn it there? Because that's where you actually go to learn things, is at, you know, scholastic centers of knowledge, not Google.
I mean, it takes a degree of honesty and humility to recognize that you can't possibly be an expert in everything. And there's a lot of shit out there that you don't know, and it's okay not to know stuff. I mean, by definition, for it to mean anything, for the word expertise to mean anything, it is an exclusionary thing. Okay. It drives me nuts. Anyway.
Yeah.
But we have more colors.
just as a wrap on that, disclaimer, David is not qualified to give medical advice. Neither are Kenneth nor myself. Yeah. However, the medical advice that I do feel qualified to give is, go talk to a medical expert if you have any concerns. Again, the data is overwhelming that the vaccines prevent COVID transmission and prevent worse COVID cases, even when there are breakthroughs. That's just what's happening right now. And so when somebody comes in and claims ulterior motives, is there a monetary motive in the healthcare industry? Absolutely. I got very upset when I was talking to my insurer a while ago. I was attempting to get some blood work covered that my doctor recommended. He said that it was preventative care is the way the doctor named it. And the health insurance company told me that because I'm a commercial customer and not Medicare, I didn't qualify for that kind of coverage or something. And his use of the word commercial customer really set me off, because, you know, we're here to receive healthcare from these companies. But they view us as a commodity. So he's not wrong about that. However, that does not invalidate anything else about the industry. That doesn't invalidate cancer treatment. That doesn't invalidate how they treat you if you had a really bad case of the flu and, you know, you had to go to the hospital, because that happens all the time to older folks and to people with compromised immune systems long before COVID. I mean, the flu can put you in the hospital if you already aren't doing well. COVID is different than the flu, obviously, and it can put a lot more people in the hospital for a lot worse things, and it can kill you a lot faster than the flu too.
I've even had people that I know tell me that they've talked to doctors who have told them, hey, we go talk to your doctor. I've had people say they've talked to their doctor, and their doctor said, oh, you don't need to get vaccinated. And here's the thing. Your doctor might be a lovely person. I'm sure they're very, very smart. But even within the world of medicine, there are different areas of expertise. Okay. So, I mean, you wouldn't go to your podiatrist to ask you about, you know, if you need brain surgery. Okay. If you, so in the same way, the yep. people, the scientists who are working at the CDC, the people who are at the World Health Organization, who are at the forefront of this, who are actually doing the work, doing the research, these are the people you need to be listening to if you want to have an informed opinion. Some local physician going, "Ah, I know better than all those guys," is frankly making a huge mistake cognitively, and probably emotionally, and a whole bunch of other shit too. So anyway, we should talk to Pamela.
Yeah, let's talk to Pamela here.
Let's talk to
Pamela. Go ahead.
Sorry. Pamela. I'm remembering in the who was it, like the Borat movie, when he tries to talk to Pamela Anderson and he keeps calling, "My beautiful Pamela." Anyway,
Pamela
in North Carolina. What can we do for you?
You can just call me Pam if it's too difficult.
Okay, I can handle that. I can handle that.
Pam. All right, sounds good, Pam.
All right, so let's talk about fake psychics.
About what, fake psychics?
What's a real psychic? That's what I was going to say.
I'm a real psychic.
You're a real psychic.
We've been through this.
I think I've spoken to you before. It was, when was it, Pamela? It was a month or so ago, I believe. Maybe a couple months.
Yeah. Yeah, it was.
Thank you so much for calling back.
I've called in a few times.
So,
even begged me to call back.
No, we appreciate you calling in. We really do.
Fake psychics. I know you guys don't believe in psychics anyway, but there are a lot of people out there who do. And of course I do, because I do it. However, there are a lot of people out there who are up to no good when it comes to this sort of thing and want to just get into the pockets and purses of people who are willing to pay for information.
Okay.
So I have some information about, you know, what you should look for if you are looking for somebody. Do you have any questions? Or want me to just get into it?
Go ahead, Kenneth.
You
sound like you got a good one.
I tend to be pretty hard on the psychics.
Sure.
Because I am of the opinion that if you can't demonstrate that what you're saying is true, that you shouldn't say it. So, like, I have.
That's exactly one of my points.
Well, so you just said that you do some sort of psychic thing. So,
yes,
that for me, I get stuck on that, and I want to go, how can we know that? If you're one of the good ones, then how can we know, you know, that what you're saying is legit in the first place?
One of the things we talked about doing actually was doing a reading for one or more of you guys, but it just hasn't worked out. I was out of town and Ethan was busy. And so we just haven't made that work yet.
Okay.
Do you have any interest in doing a reading right now? And I know that's a lot of pressure.
No, it's actually not a lot of pressure, but I don't feel that the explanation, as long as it would take, I don't know that it's the right format.
Well, maybe we can,
more than willing to do it.
Maybe we don't have to, maybe we can save the time. So let's say that, we were sitting together and you were able to say something that just really, really resonated with me. And that it seemed mm-hmm. that you may be communicating with somebody who had knowledge about me or my life or my family. How could we know that what was really going on was that you were having this contact and not some sort of lucky guess or some sort of
specificity?
I'm sorry?
Specificity. Like I said, it's about general information. One big thing that fake psychics do is they give very vague and general readings. And that's a big warning sign.
Okay.
So just to...
Here's a good question, Pamela. I'm sorry to cut in real quick. Just a quick question, then I'll let you get back to it. But could you give us an example of somebody who we might recognize who you would consider to be a fake psychic, like a famous psychic by any chance?
Oh, Cleo. Everyone knows Miss Cleo.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, there were lawsuits associated with the Miss Cleo thing. I mean, an obvious...
The Psychic Friends Network, yeah.
Sure, yeah. What was her name? The lady that used to do the Psychic Friends commercials?
Dionne Warwick.
Yeah, that's right. Taking me back. I mean, should we just do this? I'm open to it. If you want to demonstrate on me, I will be completely charitable and go along with it.
But it has to be a one-on-one thing. What comes across is generally there's a lot of energy from a lot of people there right now. So just to hone in on you with all these people sort of hovering over your shoulder, it'll make it messy. Why I prefer to do everything one-on-one, but I'm more than happy to do that.
Well, yeah. Well, so you say all these people hanging over your shoulder. It's really only me in the room right now, and I can leave and just watch from backstage if you want.
I can tell you the only other person in my house is my dog right now. I'm just hanging out.
That dog has a lot to say about you. That's what I'm going to say.
And probably does. It probably does.
Sounds like woof woof to me.
Can we try? Can we see where it goes?
I'd rather not. I just know how it would turn out, and I wouldn't be satisfied, and neither would you. But I'm more than willing to do it just one-on-one, just us two on the phone.
Could we record it?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
I don't know. All this stuff, it just makes me so uncomfortable. Because I don't know how we could demonstrate that somebody was. I mean, what degree of specificity are you talking about? What's the most specific thing?
Let me give you okay, so I see psychics myself sometimes, and there's a place in New York, it's the oldest spiritualist community in the country, it's called Lilydale, and I saw one of their top psychics one time, and his specific remark to me, totally out of the blue, is what's going on with your dad's right toe? Because I still see that he's having some pain and swelling, but this is what he needs to do. And the guy who actually was a doctor, he said, this is what he needs to do to cure it. And I'm like, what are you talking about? So my dad thinks this is, you know, kooky. So I just sort of brought up in conversation when I'm like, what's going on with you? How's your right toe feeling? And he's like, oh, the pain and the swelling is still there, but I think I'm not really sure what to do about it. And that's just one example. Now that's specific. That's not,
can I ask you, how, if you don't mind me asking, roughly how old were you when you did this?
Oh, I've been doing this since I was a kid. But at that time, I was probably in my 30s.
So here's what I'm thinking. I'm in my late 30s, and at any given moment, there's 20 things on my body that are sore. If someone were to walk up to my fiance and go, hey, what's up with Kenneth's, you know, left shoulder? On any given day, there's a pretty good chance I'm going to be like, oh yeah, it hurts, you know? So if I'm thinking about like an old man's feet, you know, I'm going, you know, that doesn't get me there. There's a lot of explanations.
He wasn't old at the time.
I think there's a little bit we could explore there. So you said that this person who is also a psychic, or who is a psychic rather, is also a doctor. Is that correct?
Yes.
Can you give us their name? I mean, all doctors are on a registry somewhere, and I could look this person up.
Actually, I don't remember his last name. It was so long ago. But he was an ER doctor, and I believe he was a specialist, and he was in the in New York around. I'm trying to think of what's close there.
I can't look him up based on location.
Yeah.
I was just thinking if you had I can try and
look him up, but I think he's retired. It's okay. Now, actually, but.
It's okay. I was just looking. We can't analyze a claim that's just a story.
Yeah.
You know, we can't analyze a story. Yeah. Similar to your readings, the more details
you give us, then he runs.
Okay.
Well, I mean, but
he runs a
Martin's point here is kind of central to all of this. I mean, if there's like, how do we test this? How do we do it? You know, how do we differentiate between imagination and reality when it comes to this stuff? That's the big question here. I mean, whether somebody's charging money Yeah, sorry. Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Yeah, I was going to keep rambling, but you were going to say something. Please go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying. No, I just really lost my train of thought. So, you know, like I said, being specific is a big part of it. And everyone has to have their own experiences. Some people don't believe and some people do, and that's okay. But I'm not really sure what it is I could tell you over the phone. We ran into this before. That would constitute proof. Like the doctor I was telling you about, his name is Neil. He actually owned a Trillium in Lilydale. Check out Lilydale. It's very, very famous. And I used to live a few hours from there when I lived in Pennsylvania.
Yep. I found it. Neil Rzepkowski.
That's it.
Yeah, he's a beautiful.
Okay. He has a book on Amazon called About Love, Life, and Mediumship and the Spirit World. And he's also an MD. That is fascinating to me. I kind of want to read this book.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
He's a great guy. Don't know if I'd agree with your assessment, but
well, you've never met him.
Fascinating to me.
But I mean,
you're right, I haven't met him. But
grandparents.
I think it's very interesting that somebody who can study medical science for over a decade and come to the conclusion that psychics are real. I'm not trying to invalidate you. I just, you know, like I said, nothing compelling has been, and I know you're not trying to convince us. You're here to discuss the difference between fake psychics and real psychics, but the only thing that you've told us is the amount of detail provided. Now, Pamela, are you familiar with the concept of cold reading versus hot reading?
Yes. Well, okay. I didn't get to my points yet. That's why I haven't explained it.
Okay. Sorry. Go ahead.
Go for it. You know. Could be. I got sidetracked because, as far as I can tell, there's no way to spot a real psychic. So how to spot a fake one seems premature to me. But go ahead.
See, I disagree. But anyway, let me just go through these and then you can ask questions and we can go from there. How's that? Because we tend to get off on tangents.
Yeah.
Oh, sounds good.
Okay. So basically, say if you believed or were curious and you go in to see a psychic, the first tip is the person starts asking you for a lot of information. What's your birth date? Are you married? Are you single? What kind of work do you do? That sort of thing. Those are really leading questions and that's a big warning sign. The only thing I ever ask my clients is just tell me your first name. I don't need your birth date. I don't need any of that stuff because it's extraneous information. I just don't need it.
So that's the only thing you ask them.
I'm sorry, you're breaking up.
Oh, sorry about that. I said, that's the only thing you said you ask them is just their first name?
Yes. And if it's somebody, especially over the phone, because I used to do this over the phone, I would say, you know, like I was on tarot, I said, okay, I'm shuffling my cards. Now, what I need you to do for me, just so I can make sure I'm connected with you, is talk to me. Don't tell me anything personal. Talk about your cat. Talk about where you like to go on vacation, anything. I just need to hear your voice. And the reaction was always sort of funny, but everyone would talk about something completely innocuous, and that would help me so I could establish a link. And also, if I wasn't connecting with someone, I'm going to tell them that. I'm not going to just say a bunch of stuff. Because that's unethical. Asking for too much info. Is the reading too general? Like I said about, oh, you're going to go on a trip or, oh, you know, you'll be looking for a new job. You know, that's just all nonsense. That could be anybody. The psychic also should never offer you advice on personal matters. A psychic is an interpreter. And they shouldn't be offering you advice. They don't know you. And, you know, one side of the story kind of thing. Another thing is that they will give you bad news. Most psychics try to keep things upbeat. One of the people that I learned from early on, she had an example of, she was in a bar one night, and this was an older woman. And this guy came in that she knew, and she said she knew immediately he had cancer. And she wondered, you know, do I need to tell him this? Or, you know, and there was no, it wasn't good. He was going to die. So she didn't tell him. She said, I don't see the purpose of that. He didn't know, and let him live his life the way he wanted to live his life. And 6 months later, he was dead. And I've seen ill people and things like that. If there's something they can do about it, or if there's something they can be, like if you see they're going to be, or I would see they're going to be in an accident that was completely unavoidable, I would tell them to be careful.
Wait, so you're saying
but
that
someone's
if,
not going to.
It sounds to me like you're saying that if a person who says they're a psychic gives you bad news, that that's an indicator that they're one of the bad ones?
It could be. It's, like I said, depending on if the bad news is unavoidable, generally.
But what does the goodness or badness of the message have to do with whether they're in contact with the spirit world? I don't understand.
It's just ethics.
I don't
part of the ethics.
Okay. We've got to try this.
We need to test this. We've talked about it for long enough. It doesn't have to be right now.
Well, let's do it because I mean, we're here right now. This is it. There are people watching. I mean, let's do it. I'm here. I'm open to it. I will come into this with a completely open mind. Let's do it. Let's see where it goes.
It's not going to work with our other people. It just needs to be one-on-one. Like I actually tell my clients, I make sure that no one else is in the room because of that other energy. It's not going to come out right. It's just the same reason why I won't read for people who are they have substances of some sort, drugs, alcohol, because it's not going to work. And I don't want to deal with that frustration of them saying, well, that didn't work. Well, yeah, I told you not to do that because it's not going to happen. It's like a carpenter coming to a job with a screwdriver instead of a hammer.
This to me is I just gotta say it. I think so. You're saying that there's like an ethical distinction to be made with, you know, giving bad news to people. I think that there's an ethical problem with making these claims where it seems like you can't back them up.
Right. And I said, I'm willing to back them up, just not when there are other people. It has to be a one-on-one thing.
So do you understand?
One of my rules. Other people will do it.
Do you understand why this should be any skeptic watching this, anybody who cares about whether or not their beliefs are true, this is setting off big red flags. Do you understand why that would be?
Of course. And like I've offered before several times.
If I told you that I could,
you know, give readings and.
If I told you that I could fly, but the condition was I can only do it when no one else is in the room, would you have a good reason to believe that I can fly?
I'd say, show me.
I can't.
I'll get everyone else to believe in you.
I can only do it if no one else is in the room.
Well, then I'd say videotape it and show me.
No, it doesn't work like that. The video camera interferes with the energy.
Well, then I'm not going to believe you.
Okay.
There you go.
That's kind of where we're at, Pam.
But like I said, I have offered.
I'm offering to fly.
All right, Pam. So, I will meet with you at any time. You can find me on Twitter @MartinIsRunning. You can also get in touch with me through Ethan, through whatever medium you're contacting him, though not the spirit world because I don't think that's reliable. Sorry, that was a joke in poor taste. I hope you appreciate it though. But no, I would definitely be down to have a one-on-one reading. It would be broadcast live after it was done. It would not be broadcast live. Ethan would have to facilitate I know you have. I'm just saying I'm you know, your schedule is my schedule. I'm an independent contractor. I can meet you whenever, tomorrow, the next day, the next day, the next day.
Okay.
Yes. So I don't know if we can go anywhere else with this because again, you're calling to tell us what a fake psychic is, but we don't think they're a real psychic. So do you see why we're kind of like not connecting over that? We need to see what a real psychic is first before we can demonstrate a fake one. It's like if I told you that like something that you can't see, hear, or experience, oh no, that's fake, but there's real ones out there, and you haven't even seen, heard, or experienced the fake one, what's the difference? And that's kind of what we're struggling to see. So if you can, show us the real one, then the distinction of what's fake and what's not will become possibly more clear to us. I will ask you, I just want to say this live on air. Do you research clients before you do readings for them?
Oh, absolutely not. I don't even know my clients.
Okay. Gotcha.
They answer, they come to me in various ways. I've never met them. I have no idea who they are. That's why I don't ask their full names.
Right. And that's the thing is, you know, my stage name, at least Martin Robert, but that's enough to find my real name. Right. But the point being, we can't have a blind test unless it's blind and you've already seen. So maybe we should actually find somebody who hasn't been on the show, maybe somebody from the crew, and you could do a reading for somebody like that. It would truly be blind.
I haven't researched any of you. I really don't have any need to.
Right. And I don't have any reason to doubt you any more than I have any reason to doubt that you're a psychic. But again, the claim hasn't been substantiated to us yet. So, and we keep coming back to that point, and I'm not trying to hammer it in. Let's loop back and we'll talk about this later, Pam. I really appreciate you calling in today.
Okay. No problem. Have a good night.
All right.
Hey, you as well. Take care. Thank you. Yeah, I wasn't sure where that was. And again, that's the thing is you can't decide what's fake and what's real if you aren't convinced the real thing is real to begin with. And that's kind of where we're at. Anyway, on to Super Chats.
Yeah.
Amit Matthew, thank you for the $5. How does it work if the spirit who contacts the psychic never spoke English? Well, you just feel the energy, man. I don't know.
The psychic thing, it just drives me nuts because there's never any like honest attempt to demonstrate the truth of what they're saying.
I hope that a psychic calls in and actually can do a reading live on air someday. That would be incredible. Especially if they were able to, you know, and like, that's the thing too, is like what Pamela was saying is some predictions are too vague and those are bad psychics or fake psychics.
Yeah.
Well, what's a good prediction? Like, can you tell me, you know, when I'm going to get the job that I'm applying for? Can you tell me, you know, what the next big catastrophe in my life is going to be? And how long do I have to wait to find out whether
they can't tell you
is true?
They can't. That would be unethical.
Oh, right. Sorry.
So, yeah.
Ethics.
But we have another caller. I'm just fascinated by this one. I can't. When I read the thing sometimes and I'm like, I have no idea where this is going to go. Peter in California, what says on the screen thing is, what's in the center of the earth, the layers of the earth in the model? I have no idea what's about to happen. Peter, how are you?
Hey, how's it going? Good evening, guys. I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Doing good. Thanks for calling. What's in the center of the earth?
wonderful. Good question. I believe I may be wrong. I might be right. I have no idea. But just based on how I feel and based on what I feel it could be a deception, I don't truly believe the model that they show us, like where you cut up the earth in half and has different layers, like the crust, the mantle, the inner core, the outer core and stuff like that. I don't know. I just don't really believe that. And I'll explain why.
Okay.
Because when you compare the size of the crust to the mantle and like to all the magma and lava that's underneath us.
Yeah.
I believe that it's kind of like comparing a skillet over fire. And if you put water on top of that skillet, it'll just evaporate over time. But yet we don't see, we still have oceans and rivers and lakes.
Okay. So you're saying
so
that you
that's
don't.
That's something that just quite doesn't make sense.
You're saying you don't believe that there's hot stuff beneath the surface of the earth, because if there were, the oceans and lakes would evaporate?
That is correct.
Okay. Have you ever heard of a volcano?
I have.
So have you ever seen where, you know, like in like Hawaii, for example, where you can actually watch the molten lava coming out and going directly into the ocean, and it cools and forms that volcanic rock that they're so famous for in Hawaii?
I have seen that. I am aware of that.
What does that do to your hypothesis?
So I am aware of volcanoes and that there is these hot spots on certain places on this world. But I don't quite think that you could just dig a hole anywhere and you'll run into lava, due to the fact that the deepest hole ever dug was by the Russians, and it's like roughly a little bit over 7 miles. Mm-hmm. And all the way they found on the way down was just water, and they couldn't dig any deeper because they ran into a material that they just couldn't carve or scratch anymore. The drill bits kept breaking. So for them to claim that there's nothing but lava underneath our feet, when the deepest hole has only been roughly about 7 miles, I don't know what to. I find that a little bit confusing.
Well,
not confusing, but just a little bit sketchy.
So, here's the thing: I'm not a geologist. I don't think Martin is either.
But I know a good amount about.
I mean, I took geology. Lot, like yeah. I took geology. Yeah, same. In college. But this is pointing back to the point that I was making at like the very beginning of the show. So you've got people who you could go to and get an answer about this. You know, you could go talk to a geologist. You go to any university and go into the, you know, science department and find a geologist who would talk to you. You could ask them, hey, how come the water doesn't evaporate on the surface of the earth if there's lava underneath us? And they'll be able to answer that question with confidence. Have you done that?
No, I haven't. I haven't spoken to no geologists or nothing. Just you know, like just teachers and stuff.
So, okay. Here's a little bit of information for you. This is just a brief Googling to refresh my memory, because I actually did pay good attention in earth science in high school, and I took the geology merit badge in Boy Scouts. So I'm not going to be an expert, but I can say with confidence that the Earth's crust is far deeper than 7 miles.
Yeah.
It's ranging
like,
at various,
like 100 kilometers, the lithosphere.
Yeah, I'm getting figures between 5 and 7 kilometers, because it actually varies based on where you are. But 70 kilometers in miles, Peter, is 43. So 7 divided by 43, that's 16%. So they dug through up to 16%. Or I guess that would be the minimum, but still, they dug through, you know, about 16% of the Earth's core. I'm looking at the 7 mile hole in Russia in 1994 right now. And again, it says the Kola project only penetrated into a fraction of the Earth's continental crust, which at that place ranges from 20 to 80 kilometers thick. So again, we're talking about scratching the surface relatively. Now, 7 miles, that may seem like a big distance, but do you know how big the circumference or no, I'm sorry. What's double the radius? Diameter. Do you know the diameter of the Earth?
No, I don't.
Okay. Well, the Earth diameter in miles is 7,917 miles. So again, they dug through 1/1,000th of that. 1/1,000th. Do you understand what a small number that is? They would have to dig significantly deeper to get anywhere close to the mantle.
So it'd be like if you took a Reese's peanut butter cup, right? You know Reese's peanut butter cups?
Yeah.
And you like scratched the surface of it with your fingernail and you were like, there's no peanut butter in there. If there was peanut butter in there, the chocolate would just cave in. This doesn't make any sense.
No, that's actually a perfect example, because literally as far as per scale goes, if we're using a standard size Reese's peanut butter cup, you'd be taking off maybe a nanometer of chocolate, and under which, of course, under a nanometer of chocolate is just more chocolate, because you'd be removing atoms at that point, you know, or molecules or whatever the fuck. I'm not a scientist. But my point being, and Kenneth's point being, they didn't try to dig to the mantle. So when you say they didn't dig to the mantle, that wasn't their goal.
Mm-hmm. But there's a, do you
understand what I'm saying?
There's a really like essential conversation though that could be had here, because you started this out with saying what you believe. So my question to you is, when is it a good time to believe something?
Well, it's because it's like you guys said it correct. They've only scratched the surface when it comes to the crust. But how can you know that there's nothing but lava underneath it if you've only scratched the surface? How do you know what's underneath when you can't even get any deeper than the 7 miles?
Well, they don't say that it's just lava beneath the surface. There's more to it than that. But those volcanoes are a good clue.
Yeah. I would want an explanation of why the volcanoes happen if there is something else other than, you know, mantle, lava, liquid. We're being vague about the makeup of the core, because there are many layers, from my understanding. But the point you're getting at is they dug and only found water and then couldn't go any deeper. Well, do you like, Peter, have you ever used a drill, like to drill into metal or wood or anything like that? And I'm not trying to be facetious or rude. I'm just genuinely asking, have you used a drill before?
No, yeah, of course.
Okay, so you know that if you drill too far into wood and you know, you don't like keep the drill bit straight, it's going to break eventually. And we're talking about like a 4 or 5 inch drill bit. Now, a 7 mile deep drill bit. I mean, I know the drill bit wasn't literally 7 miles. Obviously, they had something that was operating the drill bit that went down with it. But the point being, digging, what was the number I threw out there? About 43 miles. Yeah. Digging 43 miles into the Earth's crust is no easy task. It's something that we may not have the technology to do right now. So saying that they haven't done it yet, therefore it's not true, that's just, you know, using a lack of ability to conduct the test that you want, and then drawing your own conclusion from the lack of ability to conduct the test versus conducting the test, or maybe looking to see if there's other tests like analyzing volcanoes and, you know, seeing what comes out of them. Ultimately,
right.
It just sounds like the one fact that you found lines up with possibly your narrative. But it doesn't seem like you're bringing any other facts to the table that corroborate it. So what else would be true if the Earth's core wasn't liquid or wasn't superheated? You know, what else would be true? What else would confirm this?
So it's because I probably got to study this a little bit more, but just the two biggest clues that I had or arguments was the hole made in Russia. And the other thing, it's like that example that I did, because the crust compared to the mantle, the crust is very thin, very little. Mm-hmm. And it's like I said, if you put a skillet but over 43, fire, whatever
43 miles
the skillet, which is evaporate.
Right, but a skillet.
But if the skillet was 43 miles deep, the heat would dissipate. Sorry to cut you off, Kenneth. I worked at a coffee shop for a number of years. And with that, you learn a lot about temperature gradients. You learn that if you pour hot things over, you know, ice, at which rate they melt, and you actually have to stir it a little bit, and it's not just going to automatically all, you know, the temperature gradient isn't going to immediately make everything the same temperature. So what you're saying is, when you take a heat source and put a quarter inch skillet over it, yeah, the skillet gets hot and whatever's on top of it gets hot. Now take a heat source and put a 43 mile skillet on top of it. Doesn't matter how hot you get that heat source, whatever's on top of the 43 mile deep skillet is not going to get as hot as the heat source, because the skillet itself is going to absorb heat. The same way, and actually I'm glad I went with this line because I'm figuring it out as I go. The same way, if you crack an egg directly onto the burner versus the skillet, it's going to cook faster on the burner. Now use two skillets and it's going to cook slower, three skillets and it's going to cook slower still. And again, we're talking about 43 miles of crust that can absorb a lot of that heat. So I hear what you're saying, but I don't think that the conclusions that you're drawing are based on all of the evidence. I think that you're just cherry picking the bits that you think you know, and then ignoring all the bits that you don't know. But this is, and this we're is, trying to get you to talk about the big picture.
This is why, the conversation I really want to try to have with you really fast is about when is it time to believe something.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
I'm asking you. Yeah. When should you believe something?
When should I believe something?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know when they have, I guess you could say like concrete evidence, because I mean, I just don't know. I probably got to do a little bit more research on this. I should have done it. I've been pretty busy, but those just were the big, kind of 2 points arguments that I had.
Okay, really quickly, just as a final point on the whole question of what is at the, underneath the surface of the earth.
Right.
Here's what you Google tonight. Why do magnets work? That will take you on a journey. Okay. That'll get you started. But the bigger question is this. So you used the word evidence, and we're using words that are loaded with meaning. So words like believe, words like know, as in like knowledge. So, you said evidence. This is a place where there's a sticking point that I have with people a lot about what does it mean for something to be evidence? So if I walked outside and I watched the movement of the sun as it rises and falls, I could say I have evidence that the earth is flat, because from where I'm standing, it appears to be. I could say I have evidence that the sun goes around the earth, and I'd be wrong. So I'm trying to get you to think about this on a slightly deeper level. What is evidence?
Right.
No, what is it? Like he's asking you.
Evidence. Yeah, I have my answer, but I'm wondering if you have a thought.
Something that you could prove. Something you could prove, I guess.
So, I'm just going to give you. So, the way I like to think about evidence, and you might find a better definition than this if you think about it longer than I have, is anything that can be used to demonstrate that a claim is true. So, if someone tells me that there's peanut butter inside of a Reese's, evidence would be anything that they could present to prove that is the case.
Mm-hmm. You got it. I have a question.
Okay. So, yeah.
Besides the volcanoes, what other proof would you have to say that there is magma or lava underneath our feet, and that it's that like the mantle and the core that exists.
So what you need to do is you need to, I mean, if you really want to dig into this, you could get on Amazon or fuck Amazon. You could go, if Bezos has enough money, you could go to the library and you could go check out a book on geology and get your questions answered.
Here's an even better thing. I'm putting a link from the BBC in the YouTube chat right now, where you can find it at any time. Just go back and look at the live chat and search my name. Or really just go back and look at the live chat and search bbc.com. The article is How We Know What Lies at the Earth's Core. It has to do with quite a few different things, including seismic waves and how they travel through different parts of the Earth differently.
Yep.
There's all sorts of things. another big indication the Earth's core is tectonic action. I mean, how do the plates float and move over time if they're not on something that something that is malleable?
But see, Martin's doing the legwork for you. And
yes, I am.
What I'm trying to point out is that there's a temptation that all of us face to arrive at conclusions, because conclusions make us comfortable. Conclusions make us feel like we figured shit out. Conclusions feel safe. But the thing is, if we haven't done the legwork of actually figuring it out, if we don't have evidence to support our conclusions, if we put the conclusion first based on our feelings or our intuitions, we can bet on being wrong. That is a reliable way to be wrong about the world around you. It's a good way for your beliefs to not correspond with reality, because you can be very certain about a belief. You can be convinced about something and it has nothing to do with whether or not the belief is true. So I'm a big advocate for wanting to have true beliefs. And so to get there, you have to do work. You can't from the armchair go, well, you know, I think I've got it figured out. All the scientists, all these geologists are saying that the composition of the Earth is this, but I don't know. What then? How are there oceans and lakes? I don't know. I think those guys, are wrong. You haven't actually done any work at that point. And they have. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand you. Okay, well, you guys got me beat on this one.
Hey, yeah, here's the thing. Yeah, I was going to say it's not about having you beat so much. It's about if you had a compelling case, I would want to hear it. And I did hear a case. It just wasn't compelling. So it's not so much about who beat who. It's more about, like you said. I mean, you said it in the middle of this call, Peter. You need to do more research on this, and you know that. So we're not trying to beat anybody or put anybody down or anything like that. What we want to do is we want to come to a mutual understanding.
No, correct. I understand that. Thank you for the respect.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I know I can get a little spicy sometimes. And I know this show, is generally supposed to be positively structured. So I just want to make sure that I say that to you and thank you so much for calling in. I don't know if we were anywhere else to go with this call. Kenneth, do you have any? Oh yeah, go ahead.
I've got a book recommendation.
Yeah.
So just really quickly, Peter, do you like to read?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. I don't know. A lot of people don't. There's a lot of people who I tell them they should check out a book and they're like, I would rather not. So, but Carl Sagan's book, The Demon Haunted World, is about how to do science, how to think about the world in a way that will lead you to knowledge, not just belief. So when you talk to people, who think about this stuff, a term you'll hear thrown around is justified true belief as a definition for knowledge. It's not a perfect definition, but it's a useful one. So if you think about belief is just a state of being convinced, but to have knowledge, there's a higher threshold. Knowledge is better than belief. For knowledge, something has to be justified and it has to be true in order for you to be convinced of it. Okay. So I would highly recommend checking out Carl Sagan's book, and just his life's work generally, because he was all about science and skepticism. If you read that, I think it'll open some doors for you, because the thing that's really incredible about the process of doing the work of digging in with the scientists is the world is a fascinating place, and the sheer scope of everything is mind-boggling. I mean, when I was a Christian for 20 plus years, I used to think that, sort of meditating on like the bigness of God and feeling like a sense of awe at, God's so powerful and so big was like this big thing. But then I started to learn, after leaving Christianity, I started to actually learn about the universe and found out how much bigger the universe is than my conceptions about it, from my religious background. I mean, it's it's incredible the journey that you could go on if you really wanted to start figuring stuff out.
Okay.
Wonderful. Hey, Peter, on that subject,
think about Carl Sagan book.
Excellent. And on the subject about thinking about it more, we do want you to call back. I'm not going to be on next week, but I know we have some fantastic folks hosting every single week. But yeah, just, you know, whether it be next week or in a few weeks, go ahead and take some time and, you know, do your homework, do your due diligence. And if you feel more confirmed in your belief from doing your homework, then we want to hear about it. But if you find that, oh, wait, maybe I wasn't confirmed in my belief, we don't need you to come in and say, oh, I was wrong, but we'd still like to hear from you. You know, this show is kind of all about progress is how I'd like to structure it. Whether it be progress in the conversation, progress in analyzing our beliefs, or, you know, yeah, it's about being a little better every day. So Ultimately, I just want to say again, thank you for calling, Peter. I'm still going to stick with my belief that, geologists have the Earth's core figured out. but I'm open to hearing more evidence in the future. So with that being said, have a great evening. All right. Well, unfortunately, Peter was our last caller for the evening. I do want to take a moment and plug the YFNA Discord where I will be doing the after show. Kenneth, are you coming to the after show?
Yep.
Fantastic. And here's Ethan.
Me too.
Yay.
I had a question for you guys and I totally forgot it, but there is a super chat. From Secular Rarity, one of our lovely mods and call screeners.
Woo.
Kenneth and Martin are on fire.
Thank you, Secular Rarity.
Right. Yes.
On fire like that Earth's core.
Yeah. I just saw a comment about how our esteemed call screener hates JTB. So I would love to dig into that more.
What's that?
Justified true belief.
Oh,
people have problems with it because it's not perfect. And there's big questions about, you know, justification. I mean, what Keith says in his comment here is, can we really justify? Do we have access to truly know if something is true? So it becomes about definitions. So, you know, if true is consistent with reality, I mean, I've got a pretty loose definition for justified true belief, which is why it always kills me when theists will tell me that my standards are too high, because I think they're pretty low. Justified just means evidence. And my definition for evidence is broad. Anything that can be used to demonstrate that a claim is true. So anything, you know, and true being just consistent with reality, what we're all observing here. So the threshold's pretty wide open for JTB. But the theists still can't get there. So, you know, it's frustrating. So
I'd like to thank our top tier patrons, Cindy Plaza, Kenneth Leonard, Sky, Jump and Shoot, Oz, Secular Rarity, Philip Leach, Caitlin Beyond, Toast, Richard Gilliver, Sunset Sarge, The Blazing Wizard Pope, Amit Matthew, Keanta, and Fava Beans, Ray Sylvester, and Kyle Brewer. Thank you for your patronage. Kenneth Leonard's links are in the description of the video.
For shit.
Martin, I actually need yours. I don't have yours saved, your Twitter. Or link
it's I don't have one. Yeah, the only media I want people who don't know me following me on is Twitter. It's Martin is running, all one word, two N's in running. And it's true. Martin is generally running. Try to run every day.
He recently tested positive for abs, ladies and gentlemen. There's
proof. You saw that?
Of course I saw it. I can't stop thinking about it.
Fucking happy. Like you have no idea. I put in the work, believe me. I've been at the gym 5 or 6 days a week for the last 7 weeks.
I see your photos.
Yeah.
Hopefully I'll get my abs soon too.
And I've never done core like this before either. 15 to 30 minutes every single day. Well,
really?
Maybe not every day.
Maybe that's
no,
what
that's
I
a
need.
Lie. Every other day. I give myself days off.
You need to tell me your routine so I can get abs. Because right now mine suck. I have another good workout regimen.
I've given up on abs for life.
Yeah.
It's a
wrap. I hate doing abs, man. I hate it.
My six pack is in the back of the fridge and it's going to stay there for the rest of my days. So
here's the thing with me. I do have I'll say not mild, but not chronic either. A medium gut condition that prevents me from eating a lot of the foods that one would get fat off of, such as wheat and gluten, or excuse me, wheat and dairy, also beef and corn. So not being able to eat any of those things, not being able to drink beer, limited alcohol intake, you know, again, no cheese, no ice cream, that kind of helps with losing weight.
Yeah. Oh,
so I have an advantage, I guess. I don't know if I'd call it an advantage.
See, you're smart. I'm lactose intolerant. I still will go ham on some ice cream. I will suffer the next day. I'll be complaining.
It's way worse than you. Trust me. Like, I was almost in the hospital about a year and a half ago. So
it's terrible. All right. Yeah. Well, hey,
you know. When I say gut condition, I don't mean lactose intolerance.
Okay.
But yeah, no, hey, if you can eat cheese, here's the thing. I am now leaving more cheese in the world for all of you people. So enjoy it.
Man's a hero.
That is my gift. gift to you.
On that note, like, subscribe, and join us for the Discord after show. Good night.
Have a great night, guys.